Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Kimberly under center, sends a man in motion. Here comes a handoff, Pepper right side, touchdown, Shekalebe! Taylor on the first snap of the third quarter, back to pass. He hits the man in motion to the near side. It's Tanner. Tanner breaks the tackle to 50, to the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Dan Hill. Now here's the run left side. Standing up into the end zone is Dressler for the touchdown. And the Ironmen have two scores after the game was tied at 7. Pagano under center once again. Pagano back to pass. Nope, it's going to be a handoff inside. Off to the races to the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, that's Tristan Gray, the wingback. Tristan Gray with the touchdown for the Ironmen. And that will put it in the mercy rule with a 20-yard touchdown run.
Also ended up being T. Gray's first varsity touchdown of the season, anyway. Don't know if that's the first one of his career, but pretty sure it's the first one of the season, if my notes are correct.
That final 45-7, was it?
Yeah, it was a little surprising.
Yeah, a lot of folks. Well, you know, there is a rivalry between Shikellamy and Danville that goes, back to the 1960s. And I think that these two teams have played every year that Shikellamy has been in existence when they merged Norrie and Sunbury.
Yeah, 45-7, though, big surprise, and that's a little bit of our Monday montage. No Penn State to drop in there because the Nittany Lions were on a bye week.
We're hoping next Monday to have a huge montage of Steve Jones and Kevin Herr saying, touchdown Penn State and Shikellamy. That would be very nice to have a Monday like that.
Friday night, the Braves take on Shamokin. That'll be senior night at Shikellamy Stadium. Last home game of the regular season, although the Braves still do have a opportunity to come up with a home game for the playoffs. And the Penn State Nittany Lions on the road at Ohio State for a primetime showdown.
And Bucknell is where?
Bucknell is at home against Lehigh. Yeah, so in other words, with Lehigh's offense and the way they run things, I'm just going to show up somewhere around halftime, do a little halftime discussion with Doug, then head back home, because there's really no chance for me to talk anyway when Lehigh has the football.
They are faster than the Philadelphia Eagles in their know-how-to offense?
They're not quite that fast, but they get to the line in a hurry, and they get set up and ready to go in a hurry. And this is a team, too, that Lehigh, that has had a couple of big come-from-behind victories early in the season, especially one on the road against Ivy League opponent Princeton. And on NBC Sports Network, as a matter of fact.
Speaking of high-tech, or not high-tech, but fast-moving
high-octane
offenses, the Philadelphia Eagles did not do as well as some expected on Sunday.
Yeah, they fell to the Cowboys. Foles got injured in that one. I didn't see exactly when.
No, it was kind of an odd thing, as I recall.
And can't remember when
the question I have for you is,
yes,
did you listen to, watch, observe, or otherwise become involved in the Steelers game on Sunday?
Well, I decided to try my theory out. I did not see the first half of the game. I was getting updates on scores.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did find the second half of the game where I did watch the entire second half of the game while the Steelers had the lead and kept the lead.
And they won for the second time,
yes,
all this season?
And it's a winning streak now.
They're in playoff contention?
Frighteningly, I believe they are, actually. Here's the thing. All right, I am not claiming that I don't have my fair weather moments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have not completely come back and said, oh, this is great, now I'm back into football. No, I'm not. However, if the Steelers were not to win another game the rest of the year, knowing you're not getting swept by the Ravens does make it a little less painful.
I think that that game, that final score, and the Steelers win caught many observers kind of, I would say, off guard.
Oh, I would think so.
And the other thing that's going on that can wait till tomorrow, though we'll mention it, there does happen to be a World Series.
That is true.
I think it starts Wednesday.
And our good friend Steve Jones' team is involved
it
in
is.
Said World Series. And one of my favorite players next to Chase Utley involved, yes, in that, the Flying Hawaiian.
All right. And one of the big announcements in baseball today was the manager of the Detroit Tigers, Jim Leland, has retired.
Again. Yeah, he did retire like twice, wasn't it?
Once in Pittsburgh and once in Florida.
All right. I was thinking about that as I saw that come over today. I'm like, I thought he retired a couple of times now. But
he didn't even have to type up a new letter. He just changed the letterhead.
You know what? That's one team, though, that I am surprised did not make it to the series. Not to take anything away from Boston, but Detroit had such a great season. It all makes the difference on how you go into the playoffs.
It was one pitch, wasn't it? That grand slam home run?
Yeah, that probably is true. Yeah.
One pitch made the difference. And that's how, out of the thousands and thousands of pitches in a season, Big Poppy had the one he wanted.
Well, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Today's Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. You can find them online at purdyinsurance.com. Kevin Herr and Bob Buhner in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. Steve Jones will be back at the Chateau again tomorrow, as he is in Connecticut with a family situation that he talked about on Friday, and getting that taken care of. So our did lose a loved one over the last week, and our thoughts and prayers with Steve and the family as they are taking care of things in the New England area. But in the meantime, it gives us a chance to look back on some of the great interviews we've had over the last couple of weeks and talk a little high school football as we did in the first hour. Bill Friedman from The Journey chatted with Steve about the Big Ten Network show and how it involved a Penn State player last week. And I'm sure you'll be able to find that on replays on the Big Ten Network, as well as BTN online or on demand or to go. Or, well, you'll be able to find it if you really want to see The Journey with Penn State's John Urschel. But let's talk about it a little bit more with Bill Friedman and Steve Jones.
To have you back on the show.
Steve, a pleasure. How you been, my friend?
I'm doing very well, thanks. You have to craft stories, and obviously the Urschel story is one I'm sure that was when the round table sat down and said, okay, let's brainstorm some stories. I'm sure that came to the front right away. How did you guys want to approach him as football player and personality?
Well, I mean, you're right. That he was someone that, you know, even basically I start thinking about, well, I think about the football journey all year long, but I really start intensifying that once basketball season's over and I start looking ahead. And it was clear to us that, you know, John is a character that is worth profiling. And so even as far back as I think late April of last year, we went out and shot some footage of him in the classroom just so that we'd have it and just, you know, kind of get a sense of him a little bit and build that relationship. And then, you know, we were fortunate that he was both attended the kickoff luncheon and was actually asked to be the speaker amongst the student athletes. We were able to capture that as well here in Chicago in late July. And we went back out again in October because we wanted to get the more recent footage of him teaching because it was a different class. So we just, you know, it's not all about John is good at math. It's about the balance. You know, there's a lot of football in it. There's a lot about John's motivation for staying at Penn State, you know, when he had some opportunities to leave. And I think it's just showing, you know, kind of what's good about college athletics. You know, we live in an age where a lot of people like to focus on what's not right, or at least in their mind, what's not right. And I think it's really nice when you have a story like this. And we're just blessed in the Big Ten, Steve. I was talking about this with someone else. You think of some of the great kids we've had over the last couple of years. As you take a Kirk Cousins, you take an Aaron Kraft, you take a John Urschel. I mean, these people are the total package. And it's a joy for us to get to tell their stories.
Yeah, and that's something I have found intriguing because, for example, you sit down with an Aaron Kraft. I remember talking to John Diebler.
Sure.
For goodness sakes. Diebler was another great kid, basketball player, sharpshooter from the outside from Ohio State. Cousins gave a speech that is always going to be the one that everyone measures their speech to. Was it as good as the Kirk Cousins speech? And that tells you a lot about what The Journey does. Is it reminds everybody how well-rounded student athletes can be.
Well, that's what we try to do. We just want, you know, a lot of people, they look at John Urschel and he's just number 64. You know, he wears a helmet and pads on Saturdays. And you could say that about anybody in the Big Ten, but it's really important to understand the backstories to these people, how they got to where they are and what's interesting about them. And that's really what our show aims to do. You know, we want you by the time you're watching our game highlight in the 30-minute show to have a vested interest in the people that we've profiled. And honestly, the best compliment I get, Steve, about our show is when someone says, man, I'm a Michigan fan, but you made me like that guy from Michigan State.
Yeah.
And that's the best compliment I can get.
No question, because now you get a chance to really know all that. You did one last year on Marquise Gray that I thought was fascinating. I mean, because I tuned in to see the Maudie segment, and then I watched the Marquise Gray segment, and I sat back and go, wow. You know, things that you don't know about them away from the field.
Well, that's what we try to do, Steve. We want people to really have an appreciation for who these people are. And, you know, I'm blessed that I have a wonderful team of storytellers here, people that really care and aren't just kind of like, okay, well, let's go talk to the quarterback on this team and the running back on this team. You know, we pride ourselves on digging deep. And, you know, when we look at the roster of every team, we look at everybody, player, coach, trainer, announcer, everybody as a possible story. And we try to find the ones that are best. And you know, we only have a limited number of spots. You know, we do three stories a show. We have 10 episodes. So I got 30 slots. And, you know, I could probably fill 60. But, you know, we try to pick the best 30.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You mentioned Don Fisher, actually. You mentioned, because you will go across the board, Don Fisher of Indiana, you featured on one of them a couple of years ago.
Absolutely. We did. Yeah. You know, we've done assistant coaches like Kevin Kuick.
Yeah.
We've done,
Michigan, you know, Michigan's basketball assistant. I think it was one.
Bakari Alexander.
Yeah, Bakari Alexander.
So there are lots of interesting people. And, you know, with each year that we continue to do the show, you know, we're blessed with continuing to learn more about these programs. And that's how we find out about some of these stories, is just who they are. I mean, I saw the Training Days show this year that ESPN did with Penn State. It was an excellent show. And, you know, the stuff they did with Spider was fantastic. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's right in our wheelhouse.
Something, though, that is also important to John Urschel, and this is, as somebody who's talked to him about this, it's great that he is known as a math genius. It is great that he is known as someone who teaches a class at Penn State with the degrees. He's very proud of that, as are his parents. But he also wants to be known as a really good football player. I mean, does that come out in this piece?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you see him manning his classroom as the teacher, and you also see him in his classroom in the film room with his teacher, Coach McCorder. Yeah. So, you know, you really see both sides of it, both when he's the disseminator of knowledge and the you know, the consumer of knowledge. You definitely see that, and certainly in our game highlights, you know, what we always try to do, Steve, is pay off our characters that we've established in the show. And, you know, with us featuring on John and on Taylor Lewan, you know, it's a really fascinating storyline that plays out over the course of the memorable game last Saturday.
And Taylor Lewan, I mean, for him, obviously, Saturday ended up being an incredible disappointment, not just in the loss, but, I mean, the last thing that he needs in his life is to get an injury at this point, because he has built himself to a point where you and I both know that a lot of NFL teams are very interested in him. What's the story on him going to this to give us a little tease for tonight?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that you kind of took my thunder there, but, you know, I mean, a lot of it is why Taylor decided to come back.
Yeah.
You know, here was a guy that last year, you know, he redshirted as a freshman, so, you know, he'd done 4 years on campus. I believe he'd already had his degree, you know, so he could have had a very good excuse to say, I'm going to take the paycheck and go play on Sundays. But, you know, I think he's a big believer in Michigan and all that their football program represents, the tradition, especially the great tradition of you know, recruiting and developing outstanding offensive linemen. You know, he even references Jake Long and John Jansen in our feature. And I think that's really comes across, is here's a kid that's, you know, this matters to him. Big Ten football matters to Taylor Lewan, and that's what will come across, and you'll see it both in the features we do and also in his experience that our cameras were able to capture last Saturday.
The other part, here's the next part of this. You actually, there's a lot of stuff that ends up on the cutting room floor. How tough are some of those decisions? Because I sense that you've picked people with a reason to put them on because they are fascinating. How tough are those decisions as to what makes the cut and what doesn't, because it's not a full half hour on one individual?
Absolutely, Steve. As I always say, it's the best problem that I have. You know, as a producer, I don't think you ever want to be in a position where you're like, well, I have 20 minutes of content and I need to get to 25. That's when you have a real problem. The good problem to have is when you have 35 minutes of content and you need to get to 25, because you're whittling it down to the best of the best. And I think those are hard decisions, and we make them as a group. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I make the final decision, but, you know, I always want to have the input and consensus of my team, because I believe in their insight. You know, they're the ones out there telling the story and living the piece. And so I feel that we should always discuss it as a group. And I feel that we usually make very sound and, you know, good decisions to put the best content on there. You know, in this day and age, part of it is it's okay if you have too much content, because there's so many other platforms that we can put them out on. You know, just today I put out on Twitter a neat little minute and a half clip from John Urschel's interview that didn't make our piece about how he was outsmarting his parents at a very young age.
Yes, I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty funny clip, and I think people, you know, that's the kind of thing, like it's a very entertaining 90 seconds. It kind of doesn't fit the narrative that we're trying to fit into the show, and certainly would have been a hard fit from a time perspective, but that doesn't mean people can't consume it. And so, you know, we try to put some bonus content out there every week. And, you know, the other thing people forget is, you know, we gather this material. I mean, you know, look, there's a pretty decent chance we might go back and be there for Senior Day with John Urschel. And some of the things that maybe we didn't put in this episode could make an appearance later in the year.
Right, exactly right. It certainly could make the cut later in the year. You mentioned Luan. Are those the only two you're going to feature in this one? Or is there
There's one more person in this show, and that's Michigan State's Shalit Calhoun.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I've kind of informally branded this episode as our In the Trenches episode. You know, we have three linemen, you know, two offensive, one defensive. But, you know, just because, you know, I think it's good that you don't always do the quarterback or the running back or the head coach. You know, I think you want to mix. And, you know, linemen are important parts of football teams, sometimes the most important part. And I think it's really neat that they get a spotlight on our show.
And it certainly does that. And now for the shooting part of it, it's one thing, for example, pick out an Allen Robinson. He's out in the open. To shoot him is a relatively easy thing. You pick linemen in this one. Give me the skill of your camera people to pick up in traffic guys like this that you can feature.
Well, let me tell you, I'm always amazed. My biggest worry every week is that the cameramen we send out are going to miss a lot of the key plays, because it's hard. You know, I just 2 weeks ago, I was down working with one of the cameramen at the Ohio State-Northwestern game, and it was third down, and Northwestern had failed to convert the third down. They were going to punt, and I started walking towards midfield because I wanted to be in position for when Ohio State got the ball, and they blocked the punt. You know, so, I mean, these things happen. If we all knew where the action was going to go, we'd all be great cameramen. So, look, I'm blessed with some – we're really blessed to work with some great cameramen. And the three guys that were out there last Saturday, Kevin Shaw and Sean Healy and Pat O'Donnell, they did a great job. There's some really impressive images. Obviously, shooting at a whiteout is a treat. You know, what's that, the first whiteout they've had in, what, 2 years maybe?
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a unique background to see the footage. But to answer your question, I'm giving a long-winded answer here, is, you know, we have to use and pick our equipment wisely. We need the right lenses to get in there. We need to understand where the right spot is to get the lineman. And I think you see it. We have a lot of great kind of in-the-trenches shots from this game that really show the physicality that only can be captured that way.
When this first began, it was really what Illinois football was the focus 1 year, Minnesota basketball was the focus in the opening year. And then, of course, somebody said, hey, look, we need to get everybody involved in this. But basketball was the trailblazer for this. When did it finally come about that football needed that component? And I'm sure it wasn't much of an argument, but, I mean, what took the football component longer to come together as opposed to having basketball immediately on the docket for the journey?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question, Steve. I'm not sure I know the exact answer. I think the way to look at it is basketball was kind of our trial balloon with this. You know, it's obviously a huge sport. It's a really big sport for BTN. You know, we have usually over 100 games each year. So there's a lot of programming on our end around basketball. And we wanted to see if it could succeed. You know, when we went out to do the first series, the 2010 basketball season, we didn't know if this show was going to work. We didn't know if we could, you know, we kind of went into it like hoping we could pull it off and hoping that people would watch it. And we were, you know, within 2 to 3 weeks, we had some great feedback on this is really working. And so I think it took us a year or two to really fine-tune the show and get it to get, you know, show the schools like this is working and you can believe in us and you can trust in us. And I think to have the support of the basketball coaches and the basketball SIDs to tell the football coaches and SIDs, look, this is a really good thing. It's produced by really hardworking and talented people. That was kind of, you know, one kind of helped start the other. And I mean, look, obviously football is the highest profile sport,
sure,
in college sports. I don't think that's an argument, you know, and that's no offense to basketball or volleyball, mm-hmm, or hockey or any of the others. That's just the reality of it from an interest and a viewership standpoint. The numbers play that out. And so for us not to take what we consider to be one of our signature shows and signature brands and put it into football, you know, eventually that just wasn't going to work. We needed to do it for our end, and I think it's helped, you know, the programs. You know, we look at it as it's an opportunity to shine a light on some of the great things about each of the 12 football programs in our conference.
One of the signature moments for NFL films way back was when they mic'd Hank Stram doing Super Bowl IV.
Matriculate the ball down the field.
Exactly. Yet what people don't realize in hearing the Sables tell the story is that he absolutely resisted and did not want to do it because at this point it was a foreign concept.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, in the end, trust us. And he said, all right. And, of course, you and I both know it ended up being television gold. For you, the trust factor had... The performance of the show, has that broken down all the barriers now as to you putting together shows now that you're deep enough into the series?
Well, I think, you know, I look at each week as an extension of our ability to be able to show this. And, you know, each week we just put another brick, if you will, on that pile.
Right.
And I think that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, this year we were able to, I don't know if you saw our first episode, but we had Coach Hazel mic'd.
Yeah.
From Purdue during the Purdue-Wisconsin game. And, you know, that wasn't an easy game for him.
No.
You know, they got beat pretty badly that day. And I think it shows that these coaches are starting to see that they can trust us and that this is a good thing. And I think, you know, even though, I mean, I give Coach Hazel a ton of credit, you know, they lost 41-10 and, you know, we were still in their locker room after the game and you could hear him addressing his team. And I think from a Purdue football fan's perspective, if I'm a fan of that team, man, that's really neat to hear. And it's refreshing for me and it's reassuring for me to see that my coach cares to, you know, the degree that Coach Hazel does. And you can see it in the conviction in his voice.
That's Bill Freeman from the Big Ten Network, The Journey. More of the Steve Jones Show coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's program sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. News coming up next, and then more of best of interviews here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, like new, low miles, and Ford certified pre-owned, just $34,995. Clean Carfax and fully serviced 2005 Chevrolet Colorado 11,487. This 2011 Ford F-150 XLT is one tough truck, but at a friendly price, $24,494. 2011 Dodge Nitro Heat. He'll be the second owner, just $17,995, and a gas-sipping 2012 Ford Focus with lots of remaining warranty, $12,495. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Free auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones in the Sunbury Motors Studio again tomorrow. Kevin Herr and Bob Buhner in the Sunbury Motors Studio East today. Our program for the day, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you online at purdyinsurance.com. Get an instant quote there and get an idea of how much money you can save by talking with the folks at Purdy Insurance. You know what the nice thing about not having Steve on the program is today, Bob?
What's that, Kevin?
I can actually talk about the IndyCar World Series Championship this weekend and not have him abuse me. Now, you could, but you're a nice guy. You don't want to do that.
Not only that, but you can tell our listeners who won it.
I can. Scott Dixon wins the championship this year in IndyCar.
And you know where he's from.
Scott Dixon?
Yes.
He's Aussie.
No!
He's a New Zealander.
He's a New Zealander.
My adopted. When I said that, I'm like, wait a minute, that's not the Aussie, that's the New Zealander.
You know, in auto racing.
It's the same flag, just different colored stars.
Actually, no. And, oh, by the way, for those of you keeping score at home, the New Zealand undefeated and world champion rugby team, known as the All Blacks, defeated the Australian national rugby team known as the Wallabies Saturday night down in the bottom of the South Island of New Zealand.
I feel comfortable in saying we are the only program in the country that has updated you not only in the IndyCar Championship, but also on New Zealand rugby.
Exactly. And I can tell you right now that the New Zealand cricket team
is
in Bangladesh bowling or pitching to the Bangladeshis in the first
bowler.
Inning. Yes.
I always think of King Ralph every time I see cricket. Oh, bowler.
Anyway, yeah, and what people don't realize is that New Zealand, which is my real adopted country, had a guy named Denny McLaren of the McLaren engine fame.
That is correct.
Exactly. And so they have a long tradition of IndyCar racing. So, Kevin, when you talk it, you are singing as part of the choir, my friend.
Well, Scott Dixon, the New Zealander, did win the IndyCar Championship as a Will Power, who, by the way, is on the main continent there.
Yes, the mainland, as they call it.
He won the race itself.
And the NASCAR boys were down at Talladega over the weekend. Dale Earnhardt finished second in that race. He's had a lot of seconds in his career.
What probably went under the radar, even if you're an IndyCar fan, is you didn't realize that there is a Pennsylvania connection in the IndyCar. And I'm not talking about an Andretti.
I was going to say, Andretti.
Not the Andretti, because believe it or not, this young man got past the Andrettis and is driving not for the Andrettis in the Firestone Indy Lights, which is the mm-hmm. next step down,
right.
Their version of the Nationwide Series, we'll call it. For NASCAR fans, Sage Karam, a young man from Nazareth, recently graduated from Nazareth High, and was a Pennsylvania wrestler a wrestler for Nazareth. I'm sorry, he was not a state wrestler. He missed it by one match twice in his career.
Well, the Karam name, K-A-R-A-M, is a great wrestling name from the Easton area. Nazareth, of course, is the home of the Andrettis. So it's a nice racing area to come from. But that's great. That's really great. And you know, I share your pain when Steve starts.
But, Sage, a really nice young man. Had a chance to talk with him and his owner, Sam Schmidt, of Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, his co-owner, at Pocono earlier in the year. And Sage was not in the points lead at that point. As a matter of fact, he didn't even win that race. He finished second in that Pocono Indy Lights race and just didn't quite have the car, but had a great finish at the end of the season here and ended up winning it. And he will be a young man that I think might actually make the step up next year into the Indy cars. I know Carlos Munoz, the rookie from Indy Lights that Andretti had running and finished second in the mm-hmm. 500, in the Indianapolis 500, he'll be making the step, it looks like, long-term on the Andretti Autosports team. But it's not sure yet where Sage Karam is going to fit in, if he's going to have to stay in, it'll be Cooper Tire Lights or Cooper
whatever
Lights
the, yes,
or whatever
exactly.
It is next year. But whether he's going to step up. But Sage Karam, a nice young man, wrestler, as I said, twice in his career, fell one step away from a state title. I had to ask him off microphone. I said, well, tell me, which would be sweeter, though, the state championship or the Indy Lights championship? He goes, I'd have to think about that one a little bit.
Of course. Growing up as a carom from the Lehigh Valley.
I'd have to think about that a little bit, he goes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Steve Jones not here, so we can hijack the show.
Yeah, so I took care of it. Now I feel better. I got my IndyCar fixed for the day.
And you didn't get abused about the Steelers?
No, not at all. But I'm sure that'll happen tomorrow. By the way, Eagles fans, Nick Foles suffered a concussion against the Cowboys, CBS Sports is reporting. So it is unlikely, and this is just my assessment, it is unlikely he will play against the Giants back at the Link on Sunday. Rather.
And tonight we have Monday Night Football. Which, speaking of the Giants, they will be playing the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I don't even think people in New York are looking forward to that Monday night game.
Oh, I think the people in Minnesota are.
However, it'll be Josh Freeman's debut in purple.
Okay.
He's going to get the start. He was reported as getting the starting nod, which makes me happy because he's my backup fantasy quarterback.
Oh, a question, and I don't know the answer to this, but Henry Hynoski, I know he was injured.
I'll have to look that up. I'm not sure if he's active or not.
I don't think he is for some reason.
I'll take a look at the injury roster. While we have an opportunity, while we do that, we're going to look back onto an interview that Steve did with John Bacon on a book called Fourth and Long about the Big Ten. Here's Steve's interview with John Bacon.
John Bacon wrote the book Fourth and Long, where he took a long look at Northwestern, Ohio State, Michigan, and most particularly Penn State's 2012 season. John, welcome. Great to have you on board with us today.
Take a seat. It's great to follow a legend right there, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. John, let's start with the fact you went to Northwestern, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. It's difficult enough to try and get a door open at one. Give me an idea what you had to do to open doors at four universities. Michigan might have been the easiest, but still four universities are iconic in their own way.
True, and as you know, these days with the PR around there and so on, it's a moat. I mean, they're not easy fortresses to penetrate. The easiest in some way, surprisingly, was Penn State, only because Bill O'Brien had read my book with Bo Schembechler, Bo's Lasting Lessons, Bo's last book, about three or four times before I met him. Yeah. Josh Brandwein, the women's hockey coach, was there at lunch for the groundbreaking of the Pegula Ice Arena, which, of course, tonight is full circle on that one, as you well know.
Yeah.
And they're there at the lunch that Friday before the spring game. I see Josh Brandwein, empty seat, Bill O'Brien, and I walk up to Coach Brandwein, and he says, "Bakes." I said, thank God.
good news.
Because that was 20 years ago that I was a hockey coach here at the Penn State hockey camps and loving that, of course, at the tavern even back then, by the way. So so Bill and I started chatting, and he said, I saw him across the street the night, a couple hours later for practice, and from there we hit it off. And, of course, Maudie, Zorich, the other guys were keys there. At Ohio State and Northwestern, took a little more doing there. What I was able to do in those cases is, if you're on this business long enough, and I think we both have been.
Yes, we have.
We have friends at all these places, and you ask for your friends to vouch for you, basically. Yeah. And I'm not going to write a puff piece or a PR piece, but I will be fair. And if you talk to me, you know, your side of whatever is going to be in there.
Yeah.
And that's worked very well at Michigan, actually. Michigan did not give me official access, so Brady Hoke in some ways is underrepresented in this book. Not his fault. It's the AD who made that call, and he's making that call with every journalist these days.
Right.
But the former president, the former AD, the former players, I know all these guys, and they spoke freely for the book. But Northwestern, same thing. We got to Morty Shapiro. He insists on President Morty, but
exactly.
But Morty Shapiro, the AD Jim Phillips, the head coach Pat Fitzgerald, gave me that great little scene between Bill O'Brien and Pat Fitzgerald at the Northwestern game last year, which everyone is. I'm amazed how curious people were about that exchange on the field, and how much buzz that has gotten.
Yeah.
But Pat was great, but the key clearly was Bill O'Brien, Mike Motti, Mike Zordich, Jordan Hill. Craig Fitzgerald, the strength coach. Everyone was very forthcoming. I think in Penn State's case, they were so tired of everyone else telling their story.
Yeah.
They want to tell their own story.
Right.
And Motti and Zordich especially, I mean, they know who the real victims are. Everyone I talked to at Penn State, no one's ever lost sight of that.
Right.
But if you've got to be quiet for 12 months, at some point you want to speak.
Yeah.
At some point you want to say, you know what? What happened to the victims is the worst, obviously.
Right.
But what the NCAA did here makes not much more sense.
No.
It's obviously a ridiculous situation. I was not altogether surprised to see them ultimately do the right thing, the NCAA, a couple weeks ago. I did not think they did it for the right reason. They just did it because public pressure was too much again. Yeah. Friends of mine at the NCAA tell me that Mr. Emmert did, in fact, read the book. I can't vouch for that. He's not going to write me a thank you note,
right.
I don't think.
I don't think so, no. No.
I'm not going to wait for that one, Steve.
No,
but,
hang on.
Exactly. But they did do the right thing. And I think in the case of Mahdi Zordich and those guys, it's cathartic for them to actually let out what they're thinking and feeling. And they did so freely.
As you went through this, you had to split time along the way. So give me an idea what your method was to catch up quickly on each story that then opened the door to continue the story.
You see, listeners, you talk to a media pro like Steve Jones, and he'll ask the kind of questions that a guy who actually has to write the damn book has to think about.
Yeah, that's right.
This is not really a fan's perspective we're getting here. So, very good question on that one. The Michigan-Alabama game, for example, that's an opening weekend, the big to-do at Jerry World in Dallas. I was here, of course, for the Ohio University-Penn State game. So I had to rely on one of my former students, Scott Bell, who's the Dallas Morning Star, and he does a very good job there. Two friends of mine who went down and tailgated. The real reconstruction, though, came from the Penn State games that I did not attend, like Illinois, Iowa. Yeah. The Indiana game where Mahdi, of course, tears his knee up
right. For
the third time. Why not?
Yeah.
I had during the week with Mahdi Zordich, Bill O'Brien, with Jordan Hill, those guys, Craig Fitzgerald, Tim Bream, you name it, were immensely helpful. Those did require a lot of send-backs and did I get it right, because in some cases I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. The other big question, and the access was so good and they're so forthcoming, we were going back and forth in January and February about do I just tell the Penn State story or do we do all four schools? Right. I mean, it was touch and go. Yeah. But it's the Northwestern stuff we thought was so good that really balanced it out.
Yeah.
Northwestern's what it looked like when things aren't a little crazy, which they had been at Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. All three programs, as stable as can be, three of the winningest programs in college football, all had to deal with the NCAA in some fashion or other and all fired their coaches.
Right.
And these places are happily, boringly stable,
right. Traditionally.
So Northwestern gave it a nice balance to this is what it looks like when you're not going through all this.
Right, exactly. But they had gone through a lot to get to that point.
They went to 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, they went through death of a player, death of a coach. I mean, and
you're right.
You know, and Pat did a brilliant job after Randy Walker passed away of stabilizing everything. I mean,
he's like 30-something at the time.
Yeah.
The man-child at that point.
Yep.
And did a very good job. I'll tell you right now, those four coaches are four of the best, I think, in college football. But I will say, if I had a kid who played football and was a lot faster than I am, also bigger, I think you'd do a whole lot worse than Bill O'Brien at Penn State. The love the players have and had for him now is hard to measure.
Yeah. I know I asked you this before when we did the TV interview, but I'm going to re-ask it because the answer was so fascinating for the radio audience to hear. After writing this book, how much more do you love the game?
Yes, this question last time was great, and the suits scare me. The people who run the thing scare me.
Yeah.
The conference expansions where they never ask the players and the fans, and in this book I try to. But what I didn't fully anticipate was the depth to which these players really believe.
Yeah.
And the irony in this case is the players underscore the values of the NCAA, certainly at Penn State, more than the NCAA itself did.
Yeah.
They're cynical. They're out for the buck. They've got a $777 million budget. They make $1 billion from ad revenue alone during March Madness. It's incredible. But guys like Mahdi and Zordich and Jordan Hill, and the list goes on, all those guys could have left.
Yeah.
And if they're thinking the way the NCAA thinks, this is the minor leagues, you probably would have left. Mm. Think with your brain alone, you might have left. These guys came for the education. They did graduate, 91% graduation rate. They really did love their teammates and their coaches and their school. They feel strongly about this.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking rationally, if you're driven by fear, you leave. And these guys stayed. And it's that passion for college football you'll never find anywhere else in sports, I don't think. Not pro sports, not anywhere. And when I was asking Tim Brown of Notre Dame about this, I said, what experience was better, Notre Dame or the Oakland Raiders? He said, not even worth answering that question.
Right.
You know, a multimillionaire, almost a many-time Pro Bowler, maybe a Hall of Famer someday. He said, when I graduated from Notre Dame, I went back to my dorm room. I sat in my gown on a box of books and said to myself, I do not want to leave this place. I said, how'd you feel after Oakland? He said, I did not feel that way.
Right. But you know,
the check's been cashed. I'm out of here.
But you know what? You want to know where you see that? Take tomorrow. all the Lettermen on the sideline.
I love that.
Go to a Michigan game, all the Lettermen on the sideline.
Holding the banner.
Ohio State, all the Lettermen on the sideline. Northwestern, same thing. That's you will not see that on the pro level. They're so attached to wanting to be here, you know, and have that experience.
Every one of those Lettermen, I guarantee you, if Penn State recruited you in the Joe Paterno years, I guarantee you, you had other choices.
Yeah.
All right? You probably had some very good choices. You know, Notre Dame, Michigan, and others on that list.
Yep.
You made an active choice to be a Penn State players. They love this place. They come back 40, 50, 60. One of my favorite scenes in the book is when Bill O'Brien on a Friday has his secretary drop old-fashioned letters into the mail. It was on a Thursday. They get them on Friday, Saturday, maybe even Monday around the country for an event Tuesday night, late August, to talk to the players. And 500 guys show up.
Yeah.
And State College is not New York or Chicago,
as
you know way too well.
Oh, yes.
It can be tricky to get back to. And these guys came out in force. And the players told me just walking in to the Haluba Center and seeing 500 guys waiting for them. They're guys they knew.
Yeah.
You know, the Matt Millens and the Lydell Mitchells and so on. These guys were there, and you could just see that these guys, it's meant.
Yeah.
John Bacon on the book Fourth and Long with Steve Jones here. If you want to hear that whole interview, you can catch it on podcast online at stevejonesshow.com. We'll wrap things up for the day. Today's program sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, in the Sunbury Motor Studio East with Bob Buhner. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones Show for Monday, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, online at purdyinsurance.com. Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motors Studio West tomorrow, starting at 3 o'clock. From 3 to 5, he'll take your calls as well on Penn State, Ohio State. So write the number down, 800-795-9565. And Bob did a little bit of research, and I had forgotten that it was a fractured shoulder is what Hynoski had. I was thinking separated shoulder, but it was a fractured shoulder. So I don't think we're going to see him anytime soon, if at all, this year.
Estimated recovery time for something like that would be, but I can tell you one thing. The New York football giants could desperately use his very great talents and strength in the backfield, blocking for running backs, protecting quarterbacks, sneaking out in the flat for passes, and occasionally, as he did in the Super Bowl, recovering the odd fumble. Great athlete from our area and who made it big in the pros. We've got Monday. There's Monday Night Football. There's the World Series. There's hockey, college football, high school football. And a beautiful day in the Valley, Kevin.
Now, Monday Night Football will have the Vikings and the Giants. It will be Eli Manning going up against Josh Freeman, now with his new team. They said they wanted to start Freeman earlier, and they didn't get him understanding the offense enough. Man, what does that say for your backup if the guy that you just got is learning the offense in 2 weeks and he's your starter? I didn't think Cass was that bad, did you?
No, but
they know something we don't know.
They obviously do, and that'll be tonight. We can talk about the results tomorrow.
Steve Jones Show. Steve back tomorrow in the Sunbury Motors Studio here on WKOK. Have a great night.